third switch. Riot, I say! Riot!
The Guy James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life! Life, do you hear me? Give my creation life!
So this was fun.
You're gonna like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Are there any questions before we proceed?
Begin countdown. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered a restricted broadcast area. You have entered a restricted broadcast area.
Fellow America, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country. I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the Guy James Show. Glad to have all of you along with us this afternoon. We hope to have a great show for you. We hope you'll join us. We're going to have, I hope, a somewhat volatile discussion this afternoon. I do hope you'll join in on a subject that, well, it tends to get people excited on both sides of it. So we're going to talk about AIPAC today and the effect it has on the United States foreign policy. And, of course, AIPAC being the America Israel Public Affairs Committee. I have very strong views on that. I know some of you do as well. And we will talk about it today. And so if you'd like to join us on that discussion, 866-546-5254, a somewhat cloudy day here in Southwest Florida, but nonetheless still around, what does it say on there? About 85 degrees, I guess, right now. It was 87 yesterday. Getting into that time of the year when the warm weather starts up. So, we're loaded with spring breakers right now. Oh, my. The beaches are absolutely full. The booze is flowing. And the cops are having a field day. So if you're a student coming down for spring break, and it lasts a little while yet, it goes on. I think a lot of people think spring break's confined to a couple of weeks. It is not. It's really over about 6 or 7 weeks. Different schools get out at different times. And, you know, even some high school kids are coming for spring break now. Can't say that I approve of that, but I'm a bit old-fashioned when it comes to that. But anyway, lots of people having a good time around here in the sun and fun and the sand and the surf and all that. And we hope they do have a good time and bring plenty of money. That's what keeps the economy going here in Southwest Florida is tourism, not much else. Let me see. What do we got on the agenda today? Of course, coming up a little bit, we're going to talk about AIPAC and Israel. And I do hope you'll call your friends that have strong views about that and have them tune into the program today. I'd like to say hi to all the folks over at Democratic Underground today. I know there's a good bit of them listening today because of the AIPAC subject. And our folks over at the Head On Radio Network and everybody that's out there. Of course, the good folks over at iTunes, a lot of those folks joining us today as well. And we're glad to have each and every one of you along with us today. I see that Ann Coulter lost a couple of more newspapers. She's up to 9 now. Do you suppose that's starting to cut into her income any? I really don't know how that works. I don't know how syndicated radio or syndicated... I know how syndicated radio people get paid, but I don't know how syndicated columnists get paid. I'm sure it's a certain amount for each newspaper. So she's lost 9, and I don't know how many she's really involved in around the country. I see some newspapers are making a conscious decision to keep her because she has lots of support out there in the hardcore right-wing world. Do remember that. And I appreciate all your comments about our little commentary we had on Ann Coulter yesterday. So I really appreciated your comments on that. We got lots and lots of them. And I must say, every one of them was in support of our view. I would have thought at least one and the Ann Coulter fan would have written us an email. But no, we got dozens that appreciated our commentary on that and agreed with us. So always happy to hear from you along those lines. I'd like to thank Billy Shears. Of course, he's the music director for the Guy James Show. Good tunes when we go to breaks and so forth. Billy does all that for us. And you can check out his site over his pages over at unreportednews.net. Don't forget to stop there as well. And Democrats.com and smirkingchimp.com. Well, let's do it. Let's talk about the America-Israel Public Affairs Committee. I know that's a subject that's near and dear to a lot of people's heart. Certainly is to mine. And I wonder what you think about it. And I wonder what you think about, and did you know about, and I'll just read a little article from the Associated Press yesterday. I was infuriated, incensed over this. And this this segues right out from what we were talking about yesterday about how I'm so damn disappointed in the Democrats nowadays. And lo and behold, after the program yesterday, I read this in its entirety, and I'm even more disappointed and disgruntled with my Democratic Party right now. Top House Democrats retreated Monday from an attempt to limit President Bush's authority for taking military action against Iran, as the leadership concentrated on a looming confrontation with the White House over the Iraq War. Officials said Speaker Nancy Pelosi and other members of the leadership had decided to strip from a major military spending bill a requirement for Bush to gain approval from Congress before moving against Iran. Conservative Democrats, as well as lawmakers concerned about the possible impact on Israel, had argued for a change in the strategy. I have to ask, am I the only person that's nearly speechless over this story? You read this story, and you see what went on with our Democratic congressional leaders, and apparently it's now not only publicly acceptable, but publicly astute to openly trash the constitutional requirement that Congress declare war in favor of the perceived interests of Israel. That's right. Israel is now more important to our congressional Democrats than the Constitution of the United States. But then it's been that way for some time now. And the reasoning behind this, according to news reports, is that such restrictions could imperil our support for Israel, which is, quote, threatened by Iran, end quote. And this language was not added by accident, but was the result of lobbying by the America-Israel Public Affairs Committee, better known as AIPAC. So there you have it. The Democrats decide to go ahead and give Junior Bush all the rope he needs, give him all the toys he needs, to hell with the constitutional requirement having to go to the Congress to declare war. Go ahead, Junior. Go ahead. We Democrats will cede the constitutional authority to you. And our dirty little secret for doing it is that AIPAC owns us. Owns us. I seriously doubt, before anybody starts up with the anti-Semitism crap, and that's what it is, if you can't distinguish between the two, why then don't even join in on this discussion. But I doubt that AIPAC speaks for most American Jews who are, if the polls are all accurate, as opposed to our little Mesopotamian misadventures as the rest of the society here in this country. But they do speak for the Jewish leadership and for the Israeli government, which means for Likud and the idiot group formed by Ariel Sharon and now headed by Olmert, that genius behind last summer's punitive expedition against Lebanon and Hezbollah that, as we all know, turned out so swimmingly. And for the moment, I'm not going to catalog all the ways that AIPAC is, for all practical purposes, an arm of the Israeli Foreign Office, because they are. Here we have a case where a foreign power is, in effect, telling us, let's you and him fight. And a major American party is just only too happy to go ahead and oblige. The Democrats, why, sure. Now, I know that the Democrats will say that this in no way means that they want war with Iran. Of course, that's what they'll say. And they mean that. That all they're doing is preserving the options that the president has at his disposal to deal with a threat to the region. Who are they kidding? Give this president options? Yeah, giving this dolt options is the same thing as telling him to go ahead and make his day. It's handing a kid a loaded gun. And they have to know that. They do know that. But such is the fear of certain members to face the wrath of AIPAC that they toss common sense to the wind and suddenly trust the folks in the White House to be prudent and judicious over this matter. You know, I don't think I've seen a more obscene display of political opportunism for a very long time. And it's the Democrats doing it. One might expect it of the Republicans to go ahead and give Junior Bush whatever he needs to start himself another little war. And right now, the only thing preventing an enlargement of the war into Persia is the obvious reluctance of our military leaders. The Guardian of London reports that six top military leaders have threatened to resign over it. Our precious principle of civilian control of the military is being eroded because they're the only ones with any sense left in the United States Capitol. Maybe because they're the ones who'll have to fight this war. But how long will that last as Bush and company start ratcheting up the talk of Iranian WMDs and the need to liberate the oppressed peoples over there? So I want all my friends and listeners to remember that when U.S. forces are engaged in a fighting retreat back to Kuwait in an action that will be just as humiliating as the evacuation of Saigon many years ago, when you need a second mortgage to fill up your gas tank at the pump, and when interest rates are through the roof because of the Chinese have grown exasperated with financing the juvenile antics of the sole remaining superpower and its boy king, it's just possible that the public will recall this fine mess was wished upon us by a foreign government. And that will be neither any good for the Jews nor the Democrats. 866-546-5254. We'll talk about AIPAC throughout this first hour. Let's go to the phones. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
It's Susan from Columbia City, Oregon.
Yes.
I'll start off the firestorm. The last time I looked, it was called the United States of America, not the United States of America and Israel. And I pretty much resent being told by AIPAC what to do as far as my government and my foreign policy. It really ticks me off.
Yeah, and me too. And it ought to have everybody infuriated that this tiny little country with just a few million folks are basically running our foreign policy in the Middle East. And
as far as Iran being a threat, oh, give me a break. Let's face it, how many nukes does Israel have? Lots?
Well, they've they've got quite a few that they won't even admit. That no one will admit they have. We know they have them. Everybody knows they have them.
Sure.
And it seems to me since 1948, if memory serves me correct, they've started at least three wars. How many has Iran started in the last 250 years? I think it's been no war since for 250 years that they've started. So if I were going to be afraid of anybody in the area, I know who I'd be afraid of.
Yeah, I just want to leave me alone. Go away.
Yeah, me too.
That's all I had to say, guy. You have a nice day.
Thanks for your call. Yeah, the audacity of this tiny little country having undue influence over the government of the United States. And they do. Make no mistake about it. In 1997, Fortune magazine asked Congress to rank the 25 most powerful lobbying organizations in D.C. And in 2005, the National Journal did the same thing. And both times, AIPAC came in second. And remember this, when you hear the Republicans, for example, talking about those dastardly unions and all the teachers association and the NRA, the Democrats complain about that. But who came in second? AIPAC came in second, ahead of the AFL-CIO and ahead of the NRA and the NEA, all of them behind AARP, of course. So, who's got the influence in Washington? You go to the AIPAC website, and I did today, and said there are many ways, and this is on their website, there are many ways you can help secure and strengthen the U.S.-Israeli relationship. Whether you want to become an AIPAC member to take your involvement to the next level, or give for the future by putting AIPAC in your will, your generous contribution to America's pro-Israel lobby will yield tangible results. Seems to me it's yielding very tangible results, isn't it? I'm appalled by this. I really am. One time after another, the United States Congress will back Israel no matter what they do. And if you just would remember back to late July, I believe it was, early August, late July, I'm not sure, I should have looked that up, about this latest little foray, this latest mess by the Omer government, the House displaying a foreign affairs solidarity lacking on issues like Iraq, voted overwhelmingly, this is from an article by Ann Plummer Flaherty, an Associated Press writer, voted overwhelmingly Thursday to support Israel in its confrontation with Hezbollah guerrillas. The resolution, which was passed on a 410-8 vote, also condemns the enemies of the Jewish state. House Republican Leader John Boehner decided Israel's unique relationship, I should say it is. They cited Israel's unique relationship with the United States as a reason for his colleagues to swiftly go on record supporting Israel in the latest flare-up of violence in the Middle East. And of course, as you know, this was nothing but a punitive attack on Lebanon. The rhetoric was amazing. They said they had a couple of soldiers kidnapped. You don't have soldiers kidnapped. You have them captured. Am I wrong on that? These were two antagonistic countries. And so the rhetoric sounded a lot better if they said, oh, they were kidnapped. No, they were captured. And there's a great dispute about where they were. Don't get me wrong here. I'm by no means saying that Israel shouldn't protect itself. It should. It has every right to protect itself. But the way they've done it sometimes, in such an aggressive fashion, overly aggressive fashion, and the way they've influenced our United States Congress, frankly, it's offensive to me, and it ought to be offensive and an affront to every American the way they've done it. AIPAC's been connected to several controversial events. In 1982, AIPAC was allegedly able to convince the United States Congress and President Reagan to veto French-supported UN resolution condemning the Israeli invasion of Lebanon way back then, which called for the immediate withdrawal of Israeli soldiers from Lebanon to allow for the safe evacuation of Palestinians. And that series of events caused some critics in the media to argue that the Reagan administration could not commit itself to concrete action to stop the killing in Lebanon. They've defended Israel against resolutions against Israel many times in the Security Council when Israel was dead wrong. We know for a fact that Israel has been involved in espionage against the United States. There was the latest espionage scandal by AIPAC that they're involved in. The Justice Department announced that Lawrence Franklin, a U.S. Air Force Reserve colonel, had been arrested and charged with providing classified information about potential attacks on U.S. forces in Iraq. The one-count criminal complaint did not identify AIPAC by name, but described a luncheon meeting in which, allegedly, Franklin disclosed top-secret information to two AIPAC officials. What the hell is a country that we poured billions of dollars of aid into doing with performing espionage on the United States? And in August of 2005, former AIPAC policy director Stephen Rosen and AIPAC senior Iran analyst Keith Weissman were indicted for illegally conspiring to gather and disclose classified national security information to Israel. Now, Franklin has been sentenced to 13 years in prison and fined $10,000. AIPAC has a huge base of supporters, both in and outside of Congress. Support among congressional members includes a majority of members of both Democratic and Republican parties. Some of the comments from some of our congressional folks, Mark B. Cohen of Philadelphia, said AIPAC plays valuable roles in expanding the pro-Israel communities in the United States. Why does the pro-Israel communities in the United States need expanding? Anybody want to tell me that? Does anyone think Israel needs to be defended by the United States of America? Does anybody think that they're not vastly superior to everyone in the Middle East militarily? It's a joke. And George W. Bush, he addressed AIPAC members in Washington. A couple of years ago, he said AIPAC is doing important work in Washington and beyond. Oh, yes, indeed, Mr. President. Vice President Cheney, just this past Monday, stated, "We find unity and strength in the values of liberty and equality and our belief in democracy and the rule of law and in our devotion to the security of America's friend, the State of Israel. As members of AIPAC, you play a vital role in making the strategic and moral case for America's friendship with Israel." Cheney went on to say, "I commend AIPAC for the fine work you do. I stand here today as a strong supporter of Israel, and Israel has never had a better friend in the White House than George W. Bush." AIPAC has attracted significant political leaders to address their conferences, among them the current President George W. Bush, former President Bill Clinton, Dick Cheney, John McCain, Evan Bayh, Susan Collins, Joe Biden, Hillary Clinton, John Edwards, Nancy Pelosi, Steny Hoyer, John Boehner, Roy Blunt, Dennis Hastert, Newt Gingrich, and of course it had former Israeli Prime Minister Ariel Sharon and current Prime Minister Olmert, United States Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice, Barack Obama, and Chuck Schumer. So they're all guilty, and not all, that's a big word, but many, many, many of our Democratic leaders are guilty as hell of backing what I think is a very, very unnecessarily powerful and They shouldn't be powerful in our government, but they are. And on a rare occasion, when a brave member of Congress does stand up to this unrelenting AIPAC tyranny, that person is usually targeted for unelection in the next congressional campaign, and AIPAC will throw all the money they need to against that person to get him out of office. And that's how they've intimidated the Congress of the United States. Anybody who has spoken out against them and some of their deceptive ways has been targeted for defeat in the next election, and they've been successful. No one dares speak out against them. Number one, first of all, you're labeled as anti-Semitic. Right off the bat, you are anti-Semitic if you speak up against AIPAC. Now, you know that's nonsense, and I know that's nonsense. But my God, how our American politicians run from that. And, you know, because many of the races in the United States, the elections are so close nowadays that AIPAC coming in and throwing a load of dough toward one side or the other can make the difference. And don't the candidates know it? And let's not forget, AIPAC leverages its power by an alliance with the Christian right. And one would think, well, wait a minute. This is a Jewish organization. What have they got to do with the Christian right? Actually, the Christian right really has adopted a bizarre ideology of Christian Zionism. And what that means is the sooner the Palestinians are ethnically cleansed, the sooner Christ will come back. That's exactly what it means. And without millions of these Christian Zionist allies, AIPAC would be a whole lot less influential than they are right now. You know, many times Israel is right in their fights. Sometimes. But we back them right or wrong, no matter what. And is it any wonder that other countries in the Middle East have transferred their hatred that they had for Britain and France in their colonial days when the Ottoman Empire broke up and Britain and France walked in and says, hey, we'll just carve this up any way we want to. Britain and France were hated. Go ask the Syrians how well they like the French. And the Lebanese, ask them how well they like the French. And how well the British are loved, beloved in some of these countries as well. They were hated. But that hatred's been transferred now to the United States. And it's because of the unfair treatment, the lopsided treatment in the Middle East that we've given Israel when many times they were absolutely wrong. I'm not kidding when I say, let's not forget Israel launched wars against its neighbors in 1956, 1967, and 1982. And all of those wars were won so easily as to bring into question the necessity for the wars in the first place if they were defensive. And they colonized the Palestinian land that it militarily occupied. And the hatred is there. And not a whole lot of it has to do with religion. A lot of this has been whipped up in the press. A lot of it's been whipped up by Osama bin Laden. A lot of it's been picked up by, been whipped up by the American government to say that, well, the Muslims, they hate the Jews. It's a religious thing. No, it's not. It's not a clash of cultures. Of course, there are cultural differences. There are cultural differences between the Middle Eastern countries, the Persians and the Arabians, toward the United States. But the cultural differences are not the main problem between us. Hell, most of the affluent people of that area, where do they send their kids to school? They send them to the United States, for God's sake. If they were so worried about our culture and our values, would they do that? And when they are affluent, what do? They drive Rolls Royces and have luxuries just like rich people do anywhere else. So it's not the clash of cultures. Forget that one. It's not that at all. Clash of civilizations, that's poppycock To be sure, there are differences. But the main differences come because of the unfair treatment that the United States has given to Israel and allow them to run roughshod over some of the other countries. I swear to you, if I'd been in power on September 11th, I would have called up Ariel Sharon and told him that he was just going to have to withdraw to 1967 borders or face the full fury of the United States of America. Israel would be much better off inside those borders anyway. It can't absorb 3 million Palestinians and retain any kind of character at all, and it can't continue to hold 3 million Palestinians as stateless hostages without making itself inhumane and, moreover, un-Jewish. That's a mess. It really is. 866-546-5254. You're welcome to give us a call. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes.
This is Pete Seeger. What country comes to mind when you hear this? The government illegally spies on civilians, produces phony news reports. People are imprisoned without charge or access to a lawyer. Prisoners are tortured and killed, and an illegal war launched on the basis of lies in which illegal weapons are used against civilians, against journalists and hospitals. Unfortunately, the United States government is behind these actions. Fortunately, our Constitution has a remedy. It's called impeachment. Ask your Congress member to impeach George Bush and Dick Cheney. This message is sponsored by AfterDowningStreet.org.
Some people stay far away from the door if there's a chance of it opening up. They hear a voice in the hall outside and hope that it just passes by. Some people live with the fear of a touch and the anger of having been a fool. They will not listen to anyone, so nobody tells them a lie. I know you're thinking of somebody else, someone who hurt you, but I'm not above making up for the love you've been denying you could ever feel. I'm not above doing anything to restore your faith if I can. Some people see through the eyes of the old before they ever get a look at the young. I'm only willing to hear you cry because I am an innocent man. Say they will never believe another promise they hear in the dark, because they only remember too well they heard somebody tell them before. Some people sleep all alone every night instead of taking a lover to bed. Some people find that it's easier to hate than to wait anymore. I know you don't wanna hear what I say. I know you're gonna keep turning away. But I've been
can survive. I can keep you alive. I'm not above going through it again. I'm not above being cool for a while. If you're cruel to me, I understand. Some people run from a possible fight. Some people figure...
Hey, we're back here on the Guy James Show, 866-546-5254. If you'd like to comment about what we've been talking about, the... Hey, let's shut off the music there, guys. They're tuning up in the background. If you'd like to talk about AIPAC and the Jewish lobby and how important is Israel to us after pouring billions of dollars into that country for the last six decades, just how important is it? Let's go to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, Guy. This is Alice from Humboldt County.
Hi, Alice.
The way I see it is that if the government of Israel is hooked up with the government we now have in the United States, then they are on the wrong side of just about everything.
Well, they are. I mean, they have been. They have not been an ally to the United States that I can see. I can't even see where that word ally comes into play. What could they do to help us, you know? We've got more, if it's military, we've got more firepower on one nuclear sub or aircraft carrier over there than Israel could provide for us. So I don't understand any of it. I really don't. Well, I do. It's money. That's it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's it.
I'm wondering why
people
of Israel can't kick them out of office.
Well, they're not going to. They know where they're getting so much foreign aid from the United States and Israel. They know a good deal when they see it. They sure do. Thanks for your call, Alice. Good to hear from you. Bye-bye. Let me give you an example of some of the undue influence these people have here in this country. You know, you take your money where you can get it if you're a congressman. Do you? Do you take it no matter where you can get it? Let me give you some facts here. How much money is AIPAC given to Joe Lieberman? $160,000. Debbie Stabenow of Michigan? $118,000. Bill Nelson of Florida? $99,000. Robert Menendez, Democrat from New Jersey? $88,000. John Kyle, Republican from Arizona? $88,000. Hillary Clinton? $83,000. Who else we got on this list? The defeated Jim Talent from Missouri, $76,000. Rick Santorum, $75,000. Ben Cardin from Maryland, $73,000. Ben Nelson from Nebraska, $72,000. Kent Conrad, this one shocks me, Democrat from North Dakota, $68,000. Steny Hoyer, $48,000. Conrad Burns, the former senator from Montana, $46,000. Denny Hastert, $40,000. And here's one that will surprise you very, very much. Dennis Kucinich, $14,000. There's a lot of complaining going on in the Kucinich camp about that. Why would Dennis Kucinich take $14,000 from AIPAC? Why would anybody take a dime from him? That's what I'd like to know. Because the game in Washington is money. It's not your welfare, my welfare, the constituency. It's not the folks down in the bayou where the Katrina happened. It's not the soldiers. It's none of that. It's money. Money. That's all it is. Money. You wonder, you begin to wonder when you start checking into some of these things, and believe me when I tell you, you could go stand on the street corner in your local town and stand and ask everybody that walks by, do you know what AIPAC is? Do you know who they are, what they do? Do you know about their influence with your congressman, your senator? And I would guarantee you probably 90% of the people walking by, if you ask them that question, would say, no, I have no idea what it is. And you know what really happened? can't think of his name anymore. One of the Kennedy clan, Smith. He loved to tell the story before he died, and I heard him say it. AIPAC really got started way back when a handful or so very rich Jewish businessmen got together and gave Harry Truman $2 million for his campaign, and that's how it all got started. Now, he never gave any facts or figures when he told that story, but that's about the time the influence started, so I guess. But how many of you know, a lot about the history of that particular area over there? How many of you have ever heard of I'm straining my memory right now to think about it. There was something called the Balfour Declaration that took place clear back in 1917, 18. I'm not sure. I think it was right in 1917. And there's this Balfour Declaration, and what it amounted to, they were in sympathy with the Jewish Zionist who had aspirations, and I don't know how many would know this. They wanted to establish a Jewish homeland, and that's fine. I think that's a great thing. And they were talking about going to Uganda. And there was a group of them that thought, no, they'd rather go to Palestine, where a lot of the roots of the Jewish faith were. And so they appealed to the British, and they came back with this Balfour Declaration that basically said, and I've got it around here someplace, I'm looking for it, but they favored the establishment, and here's the tricky part of this that matters a lot. But this Balfour Declaration came from Great Britain, favored the establishment in Palestine, remember that word, in Palestine, of a national home for the Jewish people. And that's basically how it got started, the Zionist Federation. But it did not mean that they were going to take all of Palestine. It favored the establishment in Palestine of a national home for the Jewish people. And one of the reasons the people in that area, the non-Jewish people in that area, are so pissed off today is they were promised all sorts of things. All sorts of things. They were promised, self-mastery, that this would be a democracy there. And the Zionists came in and started buying up the land, but they were a minority. But because they bought up the land, they made the rules, and basically that's where we are today. I have no quarrel with Israel's right to exist. I certainly agree with their right to exist, but I do have a quarrel with them building walls around another segment of the people and actually imprisoning them. That makes me sick. It really does. Evidently, it doesn't bother a whole lot of our listeners today because the phone board is just kind of silent over it. So I guess you never know. You never know. Who would have guessed that this is a subject that would not get any comment from people? I guess my main question was today, and we've not had anybody answer it or attempt to answer it, or even give a damn, I guess. After 6 decades, what is the value to the United States of America? What is the value of the State of Israel? Are they military allies? Hardly. There's nothing they could do to help us in the region that we can't do for ourselves. I guess the big thing is they've been a thorn in the side, and some of our enemies over there hate us for the unfair treatment that we've given. And now this latest disgusting Democratic, I don't know what you want to call it, they've just given in on this. And it's because of AIPAC. Hey, we're going to pause for a quick break, And we will be back in a moment or two.
To the United States, George W. Bush.
Good morning. This week I visited in the South Americans. It is a continent to our souths and in our own hemisphere. I visited with the local leaders of that lands and discussed strategies in the war on terror and the South American economy and the South American peoples. I had joined with our allies to discuss ethanol as an alternative fuel to addictive oils. I admitted certain shortfalls in our fightings of the wars, and the message from the South Americans was clear. Gringos, go home. And I listened to that message, and I went home. And I look back on this productive trip to the souths of our borders, and I remember it fondly. Asado is a traditional barbecued beef that I sampled in the country of the Uruguays, which is a nation in the South Americans, and it was delicious. In Brazil, I enjoyed black Angus steak, cooked in the Fuego Gaucho style, I believe it's called. It's cooked over an open flame with Brazilian spices. And it was a very good lunch. And on the plane, we had beef hot dogs. Thank you for listening. God bless you.
I'm George W. Bush, leader of the free world. I want to bomb Iraq. And when the world says no, I say, yeah, whatever. Saddam has started to meet our demands. Yeah, whatever. I talked to Colin Powell. He said,
sir, maybe we should give the inspectors more time.
I said, no. You know why?
Because it's my United States of whatever. Yeah. Yeah. And this is my United States of whatever.
President Bush?
Hush up. Don't talk to me now.
And this is my United States of
whatever. Leave it to me. Hello.
Putin, Russia will veto war.
I see. Whatever.
Mr. President, North Korea's got nukes.
Oh, ding dong dong ding ding dong dong. Translation? Whatever.
I am Bin Laden. You still have not caught me.
I'm George W. You know what the W stands for? Yet.
Because this is my United States of whatever. This is ding ding dong, ding ding dong dong.
I hope you got the message. Good.
And we're back here listening to the Guy James Show here in the Head On Radio Network on this very quiet Wednesday afternoon, currently about 3:48 Eastern Time and a few seconds after. Hope you're enjoying the afternoon where you are. We were talking about AIPAC and the influence of the Israeli lobby on the United States Congress. You can give us a call on that, 866-546-5254 if you like. Let's go to the phones. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Oh, hi, Guy. It's Teresa from Canada calling.
Thanks
for taking my call. No, I'm glad you brought up the topic today, because it concerns me as well. For example, I don't know if you saw on the news the other day that the leader of Israel says, you know, he disagrees with the withdrawal from Iraq. Why do we care?
Yeah, well, why do we care?
I agree with you. There is far too much influence. And like, we all support them, obviously. Like, they have a right to defend myself or defend themselves and all that. But they just have this special treatment that no other country has from America.
We've not stood up for another nation in the world that keeps doing things overly aggressive or wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And yet we've stood up for them. And sometimes people wonder why we're hated. Well, I think I know why we're hated. Not just that, but that's certainly one of the reasons.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe hated over there, but not hated. Not hated up here.
Well, hatred's a strong word to use with our Canadian friends, but I can tell you this. I know from a lot of the mail I get that a lot of our good Canadian friends are very unhappy with what's going on in with the foreign policy of the United States government right now.
Oh, yes, but we're savvy enough to realize it's Bush. Like we love the American people. It's just your leadership just sucks right now.
I love Canada. I've been all across Canada. I've actually driven a motorcycle from Prince Edward Island all the way to Alaska up through the...
Even farther afield than I've been.
Yeah.
I live in Ontario, but I've been to the East Coast, but I haven't even been to the West Coast.
Well, Western Canada is spectacular. You go out through Alberta and British Columbia and up through Dawson Creek up the Alcan Highway. It's spectacular. Banff and Jasper and all the wonderful places out in the Canadian Rockies. Oh, wow. It's just...
I'll have to go see it sometime.
I actually had a gentleman from Switzerland one time tell me... we were at the Banff Springs Hotel, which is not far from Sulphur Mountain and looking up at the Canadian Rockies, and a spectacular old hotel owned by the, what's the big railroad, the Canadian Pacific Railroad.
Yep.
And the gentleman and I were standing there looking up at the Rockies, Canadian Rockies, and he said, "I just don't understand why so many people from this country and America come to Switzerland for the scenery to see the Alps when you have this here."
I know, really.
Yeah.
But.
Well, thanks for your call. Good to hear from you.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
Talk.
From Ontario, Canada, our good friends to the north, the Canadian people. I wonder why they put up with us sometimes, the way our government's been going so far in the last few years. Some things in the news right now. Of course, we've got this Attorney General and the U.S. Attorney scandal that's going on right now. Do you think Gonzalez will tough this out? I was amazed yesterday when I had a chance to sit down. I took some notes, actually, from his news conference. And I don't know how much... I just found it bizarre. Let me take a look at my notes here. He said mistakes were made. And then he said, "I think it was the right decision." And then he said, "I'm responsible for what happens at the Department of Justice." And then he goes on to say, "But I was not involved in any discussions that was going on." And then talking about Kyle Sampson, the guy that resigned, he said, "Yes, Kyle Sampson has resigned, but he's still at the department." And then he said, "I believe in the independence of all of our U.S. attorneys." And then he said, "All political appointees can be removed for any reason." Gee, Alberto, I don't know how much more confusing you could have been with your statements. And didn't he look like a drunk yesterday in that thing? Looked like he was on speed or something. He couldn't talk right. Usually he's very self-assured and well-spoken. He certainly wasn't yesterday because his ass is sitting in the frying pan, I guess. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Yes, I want to talk to you. It's Kevin from Washington, D.C.
Hi, Kevin.
Yeah, I want to talk to you on why Israel is such a valuable ally of the United States.
Okay.
Well, the reality is, up until World War II, the United States had very little influence in the Middle East. Israel is really our 51st state.
They didn't want to have any influence in the Middle East. Wilson... back of the Treaty of Versailles and all that, they just pretty much stayed out of it.
Yeah, and we had very little. And the thing is, you know, at the end of World War II, Britain, France, and the various European powers that existed there could not have influence. And the only other country was the Soviet Union. So we needed a foothold in the Middle East in order to maintain the status quo.
And Israel was it?
And Israel was it.
And what kind of a foothold was Israel?
Considering the Zionist movement was heavily financed by American Jews.
Yeah, it was.
That was our foothold. Even though European Jews were mostly settlers, the money came from American Jews, and that was the American influence.
Oh, it did, but I'm trying to figure out, well, what use was Israel to us?
As far as having some sort of base that we can in that region and having a military, that way we can form the link to get to the oil fields of Saudi Arabia and the various oil-producing Middle Eastern countries.
Well, they were of no military value to us at all.
Very little, but still we're there. You know, it's and there's that loyalty between the two.
I don't understand. I mean, yes, I know there's the loyalty, but as a military, they weren't of any value to us. We had more military striking power on an aircraft carrier than all of Israel had. Yep. They had nothing but a little ragtag army. What could they do to help us?
It was well back then, nothing. But now, look at it. They
can't. We've got more firepower on one nuclear sub in your Persian Gulf
today.
Yeah, or one aircraft carrier.
Well,
than all of Israel's got. What does that mean to us?
Well, also they serve as doing our dirty work in that region.
Israel is.
Yeah, even though we're doing it ourselves now, but for years they were the ones who did our dirty work in that region. For a lot less, a lot cheaper.
What you kind know, of dirty work?
Like the strike in the Iraqi air base the nuclear reactor in Iraq back in the 80s. This is not the first time in the continent of Africa. You know, Israel does a lot of stuff in the African continent that the United States either can't be bothered with or doesn't want to be bothered with.
I think you're overstating their value. I don't think they've done anything that we couldn't do, like I said, with one aircraft carrier or one nuclear sub.
It's not a matter of doing it ourselves, but the United States always wants to look like the good guy in anything it does.
Well, we don't look like the good guy in that region of the world.
Not
and the reason we don't look like the good guy in that region of the world is because of Israel.
Well, yeah, but there was a time when we did.
How would you feel if you were a Palestinian and you were behind one of those walls right now?
I think I'll most likely be a terrorist.
Yeah.
I'll be a terrorist or live in Paris and be a fundraiser.
Hey, we're coming up to the top of the hour here. I thank you for your call. It's good to hear from you. You're a first-time caller, right?
Yeah, but I've called other shows within the network.
Okay, well, good. I'm glad to hear from you. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Bye.
Call from Washington, D.C. Yes, we are coming up to the top of the hour. And if you'd like to continue the discussion about what value to the United States is Israel now with the billions of dollars we're pouring in there all the time, I really mean it. On September 12th, I would have called up Sharon and said, "Hey, bud, let go of all your annexed lands and toe the mark. We're not going to put up with this anymore." I would have done that. Been interesting to see what the reaction from Sharon was. I haven't heard from a long time now. What is the status of Ariel Sharon right now? Last time I heard, he was in a coma and he was in a special hospice or something. But I haven't heard anything about him for a very, very long time now. Don't know. Omer is certainly not a popular leader in that country, and of course he's being blamed for that war. So. Interesting to see if he'll hang on to power for very much longer. I kind of doubt it. I don't know. We shall see. 866-546-5254. If you'd like to give us a call after the top of the hour, do want to talk a little bit about outrage fatigue in this country. Outrage towards the Bush administration. My God, how much farther can it go? How much worse can it get? Every day it seems to be another scandal of one sort or another. But so far, everybody's still in the administration, except for Scooter. We're going to pause for the news at the top of the hour. You're listening to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. Got another hour of interesting programming coming up. Going to hear from the folks are over at Quality News Network coming up in just a couple of minutes, so stay where you are. We'll be back.
This is the Quality News Network. President Bush will wrap up his five-nation tour of Latin America today, where immigration has been at the forefront of conversations with Mexican President Felipe Calderon. Mexico says the U.S. needs to do more about immigration. President Bush offered no guarantees, but promised to work hard on a guest worker program. Trading has been volatile today after the Dow Jones dropped nearly 243 points yesterday, pushing the market below the psychological 12,000 mark. It was the second largest drop in almost 4 years. Investors' anxiety over foreclosures and mortgage lending practices fueled yesterday's market slide. In Washington, U.S. Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez admits he made mistakes in the recent firing of 8 federal prosecutors. He said he should have been more involved in the process, but denies the dismissal of the federal judges was politically motivated. In answering the calls for his resignation, Gonzalez said the president would make that decision. In Baghdad, a U.S. military spokesman says the new security plan is working. According to Major General William Caldwell, the security plan is showing positive signs of progress, and a noticeable difference is expected later in the year. Caldwell added he believes the Iraqi people are simply tired of the violence there. According to an Iraqi army spokesman, the number of civilian deaths and insurgent attacks have dropped off significantly since the beginning of the security plan last month. There were 265 civilian deaths in the last 4 weeks, compared to 1,440 in the previous period. Amid international protests, Zimbabwe government opposition leader Morgan Tsvangirai has been released and allowed to receive medical treatment for injuries sustained during his arrest at a government protest. Tsvangirai and his supporters were beaten and shot at by Zimbabwe troops during a peaceful rally against government corruption. Senators on Capitol Hill passed a procedural vote to allow debate on the Democratic resolution, which sets April 1, 2008 as the date for withdrawing troops from Iraq. According to Senator John Kerry, the target date would still give the president ample discretion to allow for the completion of the mission. In Tokyo, four-party talks on Middle East peace began today. Japan is hosting negotiators from Israel, the Palestinian territories, and Jordan. And Eritrea, the 5 vacationing Europeans kidnapped 2 weeks ago in Ethiopia, have been released in good health. Their 8 Ethiopian guides remain captive. Officials refused to say whether a ransom had been paid for their release. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Science and business are next.
Huelhauser talks to customers of First National, South Valley, and San Benito Banks, local members of the network of preferred community banks.
We're here to talk with people about their business banking.
What are you looking for in your business bank?
Somebody that can offer me services such as car loans, equipment loans, leases, a line of credit.
And do you think because they're local, they understand your needs better than a bigger bank would?
Yes, I think they're really aware of the community and are here to help the small business people.
So it's a local bank with big bank services?
Absolutely. They're here on a regular basis to make sure if there's any other services they can provide, they're here to talk about it.
Now, it's a community bank, but it's part of a network of banks.
We searched out a bank that would have the flexibility and the understanding of our needs and a willingness to spend the time doing that.
Above and Beyond Banking from the network of preferred community banks, available locally at First National Bank of Central California, South Valley National Bank, and San Benito Bank.
British researchers have discovered even minor exercise will significantly reduce withdrawal symptoms of cigarette smokers. Reports say even 5 minutes of brisk walking diminishes nicotine craving. 36-year-old Lance Mackey mushed his dog team over 1,100 miles in 9 days to win the famed Alaska Iditarod sled dog race. Mackey's father and brother also won the race in the past decade. The UN estimates a global population of 9.2 billion in 2050. Population growth will be strongest in the poorer developing world. 46 nations, including Japan, Italy, Germany, and South Korea, are predicted to lose population. Goldman Sachs recorded a 29% increase in quarterly profit, its best quarterly record ever. The largest Wall Street investment house credited hefty trading gains and a jump in investment banking fees. GM says it will give GMAC $1 billion to offset increasing mortgage defaults and ensure the sale of GM's former finance unit. Yesterday, GMAC said even with the injection of the cash, future earnings would still reflect losses from the defaults. OPEC meets in Vienna tomorrow, but no major changes are expected. OPEC ministers have told reporters they are satisfied with the current oil prices, which are now hovering around $60 a barrel. And looking to the New York Mercantile Exchange, light sweet crude is trading at $60.38 a barrel. And on Wall Street at this hour, the Dow Jones is down 25 points, the NASDAQ is down 2 points, and the S&P 500 down 1 point. More at QualityNewsNetwork.com.
James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life! Life, you hear me? Give my creation life!
So this was fun.
You're gonna like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Are there any questions before we proceed?
Get countdown. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered a restricted broadcast area. You have entered a restricted broadcast area.
Fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Ah, here we are, a cold drink of water, and ready for the second hour of the program. Glad to have all of you along with us here this afternoon on the Guy James Show, here on the Head On Radio Network. Ah, yes. And if you'd like to call in and talk about anything that we're talking about at the time, 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. How about that Rudy Giuliani? How about that Rudy Giuliani? I despise Rudy Giuliani. I just about croak every time I see him referred to as the hero of 9/11. The guy who turned himself into a hero, the hero of 9/11, pretty much on the backs of the NYPD and the New York City firefighters, and now the New York City firefighters, finally, somebody stands up. They don't want anything to do with Rudy Giuliani. Seems there's at least one group who knows the ugly truth about Rudy Giuliani. God. I'm just amazed at this field of candidates for the Republican nomination for the presidency. I am. Giuliani, McCain, please. And you've got Romney, who really and truly is a lightweight. I don't know. There isn't a really good man amongst them that I can see. of course, there's Newt Gingrich. Oh my God! Did you ever hear that story about Newt Gingrich? He tried to play high school football. That's a true story. He played high school football, and they couldn't get a helmet to fit him. Take a look at him sometime when he's on TV, and you'll understand the story. They could not find a helmet big enough to fit Newt Gingrich. So they had to send up to some specialty helmet manufacturing company up by Chicago to get a helmet big enough. That's right. That's the story. Yes. Hey, we've got somebody on the line right now. Let's go to the phones. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hey, good afternoon, Guy. Bill from Toledo.
Hi, Bill.
Say, I missed the first half hour of your program, so I don't know if I'm on point or not. But I was listening to Kennedy on a debate on this Iraq war. So I had to listen to him. He was live.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. And on this aid to Israel, and this, he was talking about Kucinich in Cleveland.
Yeah.
Getting 14,000.
Right.
What do you suppose this Marcy Kaptur, what's her problem?
I don't know how much money Marcy got from him. Do you know?
Not a dime.
Really?
Not a dime.
Well.
What do you suppose her problem is?
Marcy's done something terrible against him, evidently. Or else she's got some scruples. I don't want to say that Dennis Kucinich doesn't have scruples, because I believe he does.
We're not going to go there, are we?
No. I just don't know why his candidacy would have accepted $14,000 from AIPAC. I don't understand that. I'm hoping he'll come up with a good reason. He's being asked for the reason right now, by the way. So,
you know, when you said about Kucinich getting that money, I just got an email from Marcy Kaptur asking for a donation. And I think I might just have to fire a few dollars off to her today and put in the email. Not that it'd probably do anything, but say, here's the make up for that IPAC money that you're not getting.
Well, that'd be a good thing. She's pretty well entrenched, isn't she? She didn't have much trouble. I never looked at the figures.
Oh, you're kidding me.
Huh?
You're not serious, are you?
What?
You think that she wouldn't win an election here in Toledo?
Oh, I'm saying, I think she's probably not beatable, is she?
Oh, no, absolutely not. There's no way. I don't think.
I didn't look at the figures from the last election, because I just naturally figured that Marcy won by a whopping margin. She usually does.
Oh yeah, she's right up there in my book with Kucinich.
Yeah, yeah, and she's been around the block too. She knows politics. She does.
Yeah, she sure does. Did I say that the total of a conservative total aid to Israel, a $91 billion and counting?
That sounds about right.
Hi, guy.
Why? I was hoping we'd open up a real can of worms today, but we really haven't on the subject. I guess the right people aren't listening, but. I think I know why, but I think they've got tremendous influence here in this country and can get anything they want out of the United States. And I think they just proved that again recently by forcing the Democrats to back off in Congress as far as giving Bush a free hand to go to war. That's what started this whole subject today. The Democrats voted to give Bush a free hand as far as going to war with Iran if he wants to. And
I seen that last night. And I said, I just can't believe that.
Yeah.
That, you know, because the election is over so quick, they said, well, they'll forget about it in 2 years' time when we go out and we ask for the donations and we do our campaign speeches and that. Nobody remembers.
Yeah, there's no way you can spin that. There's just, but you're right. People just don't pay attention. And, you know, I mentioned it. I'm pretty sure you could go stand on your local street corner and not have anybody tell you.
I know why your phones are so silent today, because nobody knows about this group.
Yeah, probably so.
And all the newspapers, I read an article on them, and they said even the New York Times, the Washington Post, all your major newspapers stay so far away from any controversy on them that it's just unbelievable. They won't write anything about it.
Isn't that something? They've got that. They got everybody that petrified.
Well, evidently they do, don't they?
Yeah. Well, not me.
No.
Of course, there's not a whole lot they can do to me.
that's pretty much a given. You know, I don't think you're going to lose any money from the people contribute to keep your show on.
No, there wouldn't be a lot for them to stop anyway. So,
and if you did, I don't think it would make a lot of difference.
No, certainly not.
Listen, guy, it was great talking to
thanks
you.
Thanks for your call, Bill.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a hot potato subject. A lot of people don't like to talk about it, but I've been meaning to for some time now, and did a lot of reading about AIPAC, and I'm kind of disappointed we haven't gotten a lot of at least some call in and want to start a good one over this, but nobody does. So I guess we'll just move along. I did find one interesting little tidbit in the news today. Everybody remembers how Junior Bush said he looked Putin in the eye, old Putin over in Russia, looked him in the eye and said he was a good man. 13 Russian journalists have been killed or missing since Putin came to power. 13 Russian journalists. Now, that's not a coincidence, is it? 13 Russian journalists killed or missing since Putin came to power. Well, I guess probably the only difference between him and Bush. Bush would probably like to get rid of 13 of them, but it'd be a little harder to get away with it here. I'm sure it would. We were talking the other night at that little symposium I was at and all, and about the Middle East, and to me that's the most important thing facing the nation right now is this war and what we can do to patch things up over there to get our reputation back again. It's going to be a difficult job, and we may have gone past the point where we can even repair our sagging fortunes in that area. We may have gone past it. I don't know. I hope we haven't. Let's head on over to the phones here. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show. Hello?
Oh, I'm sorry. I was listening to the radio.
Hi.
When you went to Washington, Guy, this is Malin from New Jersey, I just feel as though you came back so enthused about the what the Democrats were going to do, like you had an inside scoop on it. Are you disappointed at this point as what they originally said to you, what they were going to be doing, and what they've turned out to do?
I'm disappointed in just about everything they've done so far. You know, the House hasn't been so bad. The Senate, I'm not impressed at all. I'm extremely disappointed. I don't know if you heard yesterday's show or not, but I'm extremely disappointed in them. I really am. They've capitulated in every way possible. They haven't even put up a decent fight on many of these things. It appears to me that rather than try and get something done about the war, which I think they could do, they'd rather sit back and let the Republicans destroy themselves from within and probably make some hay politically off of the Republicans hurting themselves. I just think that's the wrong thing to do, and I'm.
I just felt as though you knew maybe a few more things when you came back that you said, well, no, what they told me, they're even going to do even more than what they say they're going to do because you know you had some like more like personal conversations with them, and I thought the best was if that's only true, that would be great that they really did what they said they.
Well, would. You know, one of
I know their power is limited. You can't expect them to do. They're not really veto proof anyway, right?
No, they're not, but. They really, I suppose we talked to, and it wasn't just me, there was probably most of them, not most, but, oh, probably 8 or 9 liberal talkers. I'd say the thing probably we're most disappointed with is, you know, Nancy Pelosi talked about having impeachment off the table before the election. And they really kind of put that to rest and said they were going to go.
She doesn't get it that people that made the most of the Democrats mad when she said that first thing.
No, she you're absolutely right. She doesn't get that, and I can tell you.
How can she not though? Because doesn't she hear like on talk shows what people say? You know about what?
I know you have to wonder. Well, who are they listening to?
Yeah.
I think the thing is, they lie when they say that. Well, you know, they come out and say, well, you know, the people don't want this. Well, they know the people do want it, but they say the people don't want it so that it doesn't look like they're going back on their word. I guess they think we're all deaf, dumb, and blind and can't see the polls, can't watch the talk shows, can't talk to each other, can't look at the Internet. I'm very disappointed.
It just seems they're insulated to a certain degree, maybe, and you know they just are in the bubble, like in Washington.
Well, I think they do know the story. I think they just don't want to admit it.
I was going to comment before we're talking about Israel, and I was saying that I personally had a lot more respect for Israel just before this last war that they had with Lebanon.
Yes.
And I thought it was a very sad time as an American. And supporting the Jewish state, that it sort of it brought the it brought down my expectations and my feelings towards Israel when they took advantage of such a poor country as Lebanon and the deaths that they caused in comparison to what had been done to them. I mean, it was like overkill, and I guess a lot of other people felt that same way, but that's. Sort of sticks in my craw as feeling, you know, even more angry when you tell a story as you're telling now about them just getting the money and you know, wanting the money, and it seems like we just support them no matter what. But I just think that they should, Bush should have gone over there and said, cut it out, you know.
Oh yeah, absolutely. You know that,
that was just, it was just massacre is what it was.
It was. It was. You said it. You said the word overkill. I mean, that's what it was. They retaliated a hundredfold to anything that was done to them, and there was no need for that. And once again, Lebanon ends up holding the bag. I mean, and when you look at the whole thing, what did they accomplish as far as destroying Hezbollah? They made them stronger in Lebanon.
And it brought them down in the eyes of the world.
Yes.
Much like we are looked at now.
That's right.
It's so sad. I mean, it was a very sad time, and I know that everything comes and goes, and you forget about things. But that was a really terrible. I don't know how they could have recovered over that, but they seem to. The Lebanese people are really have a lot of spunk, I guess.
Oh, I had a Lebanese PhD the other night at this panel discussion I was at, and it was remarkable to hear him talk about that and back through the history of Lebanon and all the trouble they had getting themselves free of European rule anyway, and now they get pounded like this. It's and plus
I get this magazine called it's a travel magazine, and it about 2 weeks before the invasion, it was giving a big thing on you should go to Lebanon because the beautiful hotels and the beautiful beach and the whole thing, and it was just so timely for untimely for that to happen. So
they were just coming into their own again.
Yes, it was supposed to be redone, and then it all started with that man got assassinated, and everything sort of went downhill from that point, you know.
Yeah, it's just a dirty shame. It really is.
Okay, guys, that's all I want.
Hey, thanks for calling. Good to hear from you.
Okay, you take care. Bye-bye.
How long are we going to go on like this in the Middle East? How long do you think we'll be able to keep going on like this in the Middle East? You know, I was talking the other day with a gentleman and having this discussion over this, and you know, when it comes down to it, the United States, for a good many years now, and we may be at the end of it. In fact, I think we are at the end of it of this American imperialistic type thing. I think we are at the end of it. And I think we are a declining nation, and call me what you want for saying that, but I believe we are in a state of decline right now in this country. I don't think there's any doubt about it. And the way you can look at that is like kind of a three-prong attack, and the gentleman I talked to the other night talked about it as a tripod. One leg was financial. We were the richest nation in the world. One of the important legs of the tripod was our production capacity and our military might. And those three things brought us to power, made us the imperialistic power that we are, the number one power in the world. And now we're in decline. Our production capacity is nearly gone, or badly damaged, eroded. The financial power that we had is really badly eroded. China's holding our notes. And so the only thing we're left with out of that three-prong tripod, the production capacity and the financial end of it being powerful financially, the only thing we've got left is our military. Our military imperialism. And how long can that last without production capacity and without the money? There's no doubt right now that with our, $540 billion Pentagon budget, that we are, in fact, the most powerful military nation on Earth. There's no question about that. Nobody will argue that. We spend as much money as the entire rest of the world combined on arms and on a military. How long can that go? I think the Russians proved it for us that it can't last all that long. Their military spending broke them, and our military spending is helping to break us. But before that happened, we lost our production capacity. We lost our jobs to China, to Japan, to Hong Kong, to wherever they've gone, Mexico. Our jobs have been taken to various points around the world for people working for pennies on the dollar. And so we've lost our jobs, our production capacity. We're deeply in debt to the Chinese and the Japanese now. We're still a financially powerful nation, but that's sagging. And make no mistake about it, it is. So the only thing we've got left is this mighty military. And with that, we've got to go out and try and control the natural resources of other countries, most specifically oil. And how long is it going to be? Yes, we're the big bully on the block. But how long is it going to be before all the, you know how it was in the old schoolyard, eventually all the guys that got beat up by the bully gang together and beat the hell out of the bully. That's usually the way it goes. And that's the way it will go towards us. There's increasing rancor against the United States around the world. There's hatred of us in the Middle East. And if you study the history of that area, I think you can completely understand why there's hatred towards us in the Middle East. It started way back in... Well, the actual hatred wasn't of us. It was the French and the British, like I said earlier. And now it's us. But it's not this deal of the clash of civilizations and all that. They hate us because of our lopsided attitude toward Israel. They hate us because of the way we've treated them. We go around preaching self-mastery and democracy. And yet we go over there and we want control. We're trying to control Iraq right now. We have undue influence in that entire area. We preach democracy on the one hand, and on the other, we don't want them to have self-determination. We just don't trust them with it, right? Because they're not as good as we are, because we're these fancy Americans. But how long are we going to be able to afford this military that we have? And, you know, starting back with the Carter Doctrine, that's why we started protecting our American interest in the Middle East with the military. And our American interest in the Middle East is oil. That's it. That is it. And how long can we do that? How long will the rest of the world allow us to do that? So we're losing our money. We've lost our production capacity. And we don't know how much longer we'll be able to maintain this fabulous military we have. Because after all, when you run out of money... And you run out of money because you ran out of jobs. Yeah, you're not going to be able to afford this fancy military anymore now, are you? And by the way, where does the American government's obligation to protect us, the citizens of this country, where does the American government's obligation to protect us by securing enough oil, where does that end? And a moral obligation to allow other countries to control their own resources begin? I know a gentleman very well that runs a very important firm on K Street. Great guy. Elderly gentleman now. But what that company does and has been doing for several years now is procuring oil for the Chinese. That's what they've been hired to do. They've been hired by the Chinese. And hey, that's how it is on K Street. They're all hired guns. And so they're procuring oil for the Chinese. And, of course, when they're getting oil for the Chinese are bidding against the United States on the oil. And I guess my point here is, with our declining financial status in the world and with the Chinese holding our huge debt, how long are we going to be able to outbid China for the oil? And, of course, their usage is going up and up and up. I guess my point here is, and the cold hard facts are, by the year, and my friend tells me by the year 2025 to 2030, right in there, we won't be able to afford to buy any oil anymore. And we're going to be screwed. And what are we doing about it? Doing very little about it right now. And if we decide we can do anything about it at that point, if we come up with some great way to replace fossil fuels and maintain any standard of living even close to what we have right now, Will we be able to afford to do it? Because by then we may be well headed for third world status ourselves, because we've lost our jobs and we've lost our money, and our military will no longer be able to go out and protect oil for the United States, cheap oil for the United States, every place around the world. Interesting, this geopolitical mess that we're in right now. Very interesting. I guess in some ways I'm glad I'm the age I am. You think about it that way. Hey, we'll be back in just a couple minutes. Don't go away.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got
to
go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
Stand in line. The smell of gun grease
and their bayonets they shine. He's there to help them all that he can. To make them feel wanted, he's a good holy man. It's all right. He knows of their fear in the forthcoming fight. Soon there'll be blood and many will die. Mothers and fathers back home they will cry. They move down the line, but he stays behind and he'll meditate. But it won't stop the bleeding or ease the hate. As the young men move out into the battle zone, he feels good. With God, you're never alone. He feels so tired and he lays on his bed. Hope the men will find courage in the words that he said.
Listen to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. Be glad to take your calls at 866-546-5254. And speaking of calls, I think we've got one right now. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hey, Guy, it's Steady. How are you doing today?
Good, good.
Hey, I was under the impression that or heard that you were not on the air. I'm glad to hear you.
Well, we're hanging on by our fingernails.
I wanted to offer some food for thought in regards to your comments of the reporters, the Russian reporters, the 13 reporters that have come up missing or dead since Putin's taken office.
Yeah.
I wanted to submit, that Putin has put the kibosh on the globalists with the Yukos oil thing, as well as imprisoning Michael Khodorkovsky, and as well as nationalizing their oil industry, and back when they were doing that, it was $20-25 a barrel. Russia's been subjected to immense pressure from the globalists and looting, and that there's a certain intention in Russia to help their population. Russia's been suffering, I think it's something like 700,000 people dying every year, and 80% of them are men, and that there's really only three countries in the world who could take a position to lead against this, let's say, financial interest that's putting the kibosh on everything, running wars and stealing natural resources, and that's the United States, Britain, and Russia. And Putin is now paying their population like $74 a kid per month to have babies. And I'd just like to submit food for thought. I'm not agreeing with you on or alluding to the fact that Putin had these reporters killed, but that Putin just might be our friend. He, in regards to national interests and stopping this financial looting internationally, I mean, he's He's working with Chavez, sold him 100,000 Kalashnikovs and 30 MiGs recently when the United States wouldn't deliver parts. McDonnell Douglas, Northrop Grumman will not send Chavez parts for their airplanes, which they're contractually obligated to do. And just not really taking a point there, but I'd just like to offer that to the listeners as well as yourself and maybe get some feedback on that.
Well, I think you're going to see the Russians return to prominence in the world. I really do. I mean, I know they're having their problems right now, but when you stop and think about it, militarily, they're still no shrinking violet. They've still got an immense nuclear capacity. They're still somebody to be feared if things go the wrong way there. And I think you're right about Putin. Putin sees the handwriting on the wall about the oil and so forth. And I don't know. I can't sum it up in my little brain here exactly what the oil reserves are for Russia right now, but they're immense. They've got a tremendous amount of oil there, and I think he's seen the handwriting on the wall, and is going to protect their interest anyway. And you know, they might be the last one standing when it's all over and with, and we might be looking at a scenario where finally the United States has to go after the Russians' oil. Who knows?
Yeah, Siberia is full of immense natural resources, and the reserves that they may have already calculated have not even been tapped or considered in that region. They've been tying into Korea with their Trans-Siberian network, railroad network, and actually trying to make some type of connectivity. You see what's going on with the Ukraine, where the Ukraine was getting all kinds of subsidized gas, and they cut that off and says, hey, man, everyone else is paying market price. Ukraine, you're going to have to pay market price for the gas. We're not going to give you cheap gas anymore.
Right.
They're nationalizing their interests. They're keeping the private or privatization out of their country, and they're saying, we're a sovereign nation. We're going to run our own show, and you guys can all pack sand.
Yeah, and you know, and that's a smart move. I mean, there's no question that is a smart move. It should be nationalized. You know, for these are resources that belong to the people who live in the country. They don't belong to ExxonMobil. They don't belong to Shell. And yet, that's what's happened all over the world, almost all over the world.
Yeah, in Unocal, with Kissinger being a representative, and all the pipelines that they wanted to run through the Caspian Sea, and they're trying to take it underneath. That type of business dealing at that level has been Putin's putting the kibosh on that, and I just want to be careful about sanctioning or alluding to the assassination possibilities of journalists, that many of these journalists serve the globalists, and it just might be the globalists themselves that took them out, because they might, you know, they might sing like the choir.
Well, that could well be the case. It also might be the case that old Pooty Poot's trying to consolidate some personal power and take it back to the way it used to be. And so, you know, in the old Soviet Union, he might be building himself a power base and, you know, wanting to do away with elections and all that sort of thing. I don't know which it is, but either way, it's kind of odd, don't you think? And you're right. It could be exactly what you're saying about the journalists, but 13 of them come up missing and dead. Kind of odd.
Yeah, I do. And just to be fair to that, he was KGB.
Yeah, he was.
In the Cold War era. So just to offer maybe a counterbalance to that, what you might have been alluding to, I'm not sure. But
I wonder what the Russians people, you know, we talk about the KGB, and they were this nefarious organization. And I wonder when Bush 1 got elected, I wonder how many of the people around the world said, you know, he was CIA. I wonder if it's the same thing, the same kind of trepidation people have about the CIA as they had about the KGB.
I think there's a lot of stuff coming out right now, and as we stay on this, a time will tell, and I just want to say it's good to hear you on the air. I've always appreciated your perspective and your show, and I hope you're around for a long time, Guy.
Well, thanks very much. Good to hear from you. And where are you calling from?
I'm actually at Sarge's house in Mississippi. I'm going to hook up with VFP in Jackson County and do a little work here.
All right.
Some other people out.
Mississippi. Good to hear from you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ah, yes. Pooty Poot. Hey, don't forget, Bush looked into his eyes and said he was a good man. Hey, outrage fatigue. I wanted to get into that a little bit. My listeners know, I'm sure, and I'm sure you could add to my list. I was sitting here a few minutes ago putting pen to paper here and writing down just some things off the top of my head about outrages during the Bush administration. Just when you thought you heard it all, and what caused me to do this was when I was reading an article, when you thought you heard it all, comes another unbelievable bit from an administration that seemingly is out to set new records for their depravity. We learned that at least 78 members, get this, 78 members of the 3rd Infantry Division declared medically unfit for combat duty are being deployed to Iraq for a second or even third time. Let me repeat that. Declared medically unfit for combat duty are being deployed to Iraq for a second or even a third time. Some are so injured that they cannot put on their protective body armor, but the Army is so short of personnel that they're being sent back anyway. Word is that the orders came from pretty high up. Another outrage, and so you know, the word outrage came to mind, and I wrote down a few, and I know I don't have a third of them down here. You know, we started right off with a stolen election when Bush first came to power, and soon after that we had the WMD lie, we had the Valerie Plame incident. At least one guy's going to pay for it, not the right guy, probably, in Scooter Libby. We had the Abu Ghraib mess. We've had the Gitmo mess. We've had the massive, massive failure of the United States government in the Katrina disaster. The abuses of the Patriot Act have been just all over the place. This Alberto Gonzalez mess that we're in right now, them screwing around with the U.S. attorney's offices, and the Walter Reed scandal, and a bunch of these are, it's just amazing, don't you think? At least with Clinton, all we had was just him screwing around most of the time. I'm not saying he was screwing around most of the time. I'm saying that was the story, that it went on and on and on and on and on about him having sex. Whew. What a bizarre thing. I'll never forget. And I think I've said this before. I saw, what's his name from? Chirac. Jacques Chirac. During that whole mess, they asked him what he thought about Bill Clinton having been caught having sex with Monica Lewinsky. Well, not actually being caught, but, you know the story. And Jacques Chirac said, "I don't understand. He was having sex with a woman? And that caused all this controversy? I thought maybe it was with a chicken or something." He actually said that. Because he couldn't get it through his head what the big story was in this country about some guy getting caught in an adulterous affair. He just didn't understand. Of course, Chirac himself was involved in an adulterous affair. And hell, everybody knew it. His wife knew it. Everybody knew it. As I recall... well, I won't go on with that story, but but this one with these Bush people, my God, it's just one thing after another. And as somebody that does a talk show every day and has to do research and show prep, can't keep up with it. You just cannot keep up with it. Not if you're one person. If you're a drug junkie Limbaugh and you've got a staff of 12, 13 people, yeah, that you can do it. But it's every day, it's another big political story breaks when the last one hasn't played out yet. And maybe that's their strategy. I don't know. Maybe that's the way they want to do it. They get you to forget the important ones by bringing up all the little ones here. I don't know. Seems to be some sort of a nefarious plan like that. But, man, it's very difficult to keep up with them. It really is. Going to pause for a break. Be back in a minute or two. Hey, we're back for the last few minutes of the Guy James Show. You still have a chance to call 866-546-5254. We got time for another call. That's 866-546-5254. You know, continuing on with this outrage fatigue that I was talking about a minute ago, and I think I have reached that point. Have you? Where something else comes up now and you go, oh, yeah, I know. I mean, it's like the Gonzalez thing here. I mean, it's a major, major, major story. But after, you know, all the Karl Rove and the Valerie Plame things and all the things that have come up, and we thought Cheney might get thrown out and indicted, and Rove would get indicted, and all these things that have come up. And have you, like me, reached a point where you go, oh, God, you know, it's just another story. They're not going to do anything about it anyway. Steve Soto, over from the Left Coaster, wrote a story that I thought was interesting. He said, Newt Gingrich blames the residents of the Ninth Ward for their fate from Katrina for being too uneducated to get out of town. That should win Newt and the GOP the African-American vote in 2008. Trent Lott explains away the Walter Reed horror by saying the facility was on the base closing list anyway. Until then, using Lott's logic, the GOP had no problem consigning our vets to hell. But the GOP did manage to find a way for a campaign contributor and ex-Halliburton friend of Dick to make real cash at the taxpayers' expense by privatizing services at Walter Reed. So while the GOP made sure our soldiers got screwed, they also made sure GOP check writers profited from it. This explains why former RNC chair Jim Nicholson And these people just keep getting recycled, don't they? RNC Chair Jim Nicholson, now heads is head of the VA, is this year's Michael Brown. And, the Lieutenant General, temporarily appointed to oversee the mess, has already been nailed for whitewashing Guantanamo and blaming the press for even reporting on Walter Reed. This explains why Joe Lieberman likes the guy. It doesn't matter because the story has the potential to forever undercut veteran support for the GOP. Come to think of it, why would the VFW and American Legion still support the GOP after that? Good question. Fox has devoted 12 times more coverage to Anna Nicole Smith than they have to the story about the pathetic care at Walter Reed. But, of course, it is the Democrats who don't care about the troops. And Pete Domenici now admits that he did call the U.S. attorney in Albuquerque to extract whatever dirt he could for him to use against the Democrats. But he denies that a call from the senior senator from the party in power was an attempt to threaten or pressure the attorney. I guess it was just a social call. And for his abuse of power, Domenici has now earned an ethics complaint from CREW. That's Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington. We've had Melanie Sloan on our program, the director of that program, several times, which will be investigated by a Democratic-led committee. And Osama has now been running free for 2,001 days, and does Bush care? Not content to stop the damage from self-inflicted wounds, Coulter says, and then she goes on, Ann Coulter went on to talk about, he talked about Ann Coulter's story. It's just getting deeper and deeper and deeper to the point where the population of the United States is in such a malaise, I think. The whole public is going, oh, God, not another story. When is it ever going to end? And I had to laugh the other night. I was watching one of the talk shows. I think it was, it was Tucker Carlson. You remember that old Saturday Night Live skit when Dan Aykroyd and Jane Curtin did the news, and Aykroyd would always say, Jane, you ignorant slut. And do you remember that? I love that. Tucker Carlson had a couple of Washington insiders on the show, and he was asking them, just to show you that these people think they know it all, don't know squat sometimes. They know what's put in front of them in the show prep done by somebody else. They were discussing this Tim Griffin, Arkansas. From Arkansas, he was being pushed for the position to replace Bud Cummins out there. He took himself out of the race clear back on February the 16th, and Carlson didn't even know it. He didn't even know it. He was going on like this. This guy was still having this job, and he told the gal that he was interviewing, "Did you know this?" She said, "Well, he took himself out of the race," and Carlson said, "No, he didn't." And so there he was on a national TV, not knowing what the hell he was even talking about. And he's an expert. Oh, well. And, of course, we had Andrea Mitchell the other night saying that a great majority of the people, 70% of Americans, want Scooter Libby pardoned, she said. Don't know where she got her information, but many times when you listen to these programs, you think you're listening to experts, and you are not. You're listening to folks that don't have any more information and possibly not as much as you or I. Often that is the case. So don't ever think that you're not well-informed. Well, you are well-informed. You're listening to the Guy James Show, right? That's how it works. You listen to this show, you get the facts every day. Hey, we are having a fundraising campaign, and we encourage you to help if you can. It's TheGuyJamesShow.com, and there's a place on there where you can donate to the program and help keep the lights on and all the studio equipment running and all that. And we hope you will do so. Help us out with the program. It's been a pleasure to be with you today, as always. Oh, we've got a couple of calls on the board there, but we can't take them now. My apologies to those of you who are on the phone right now. We just can't do it. Getting a little late in the program. I want to thank everybody for being with us today. I want to thank the folks that have contributed to the show in the past week. We've made a little headway. And I just appreciate your listenership very much here on the Guy James Show and the Head On Radio Network. And don't forget, you've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth.